And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's October the 5th, 278th day of the year. 87 days remain till the year's over with. On this day in history, in the year 610, Heraclius arrives in Constantinople, kills Byzantine Emperor Phocas, and becomes emperor. 816, King Louis the Pious is crowned emperor of the Holy Roman Empire by the Pope. And by this point in time, it wasn't holy, it wasn't Roman, and it certainly was not an empire. In 869, the Fourth Council of Constantinople is convened to depose the Patriarch Photios I. In 1143, the signing of the Treaty of Zamora, King Alfonso VII of Leon and Castile recognizes Portugal as an independent kingdom. Excuse me. 1450, Louis IX, Duke of Bavaria, expels Jews from his jurisdiction. Never understood why people take that position. 1607, assassins sent by the Pope attempt to kill Venetian statesman and scientist Paolo Sarpi. So the spokesman for God uses assassins. Nice to know. 1789, French Revolution. Women's march on Versailles effectively terminates royal authority. For those that are not familiar with it, it's also known as the October March, or simply the March. One of the earliest, most significant events in the French Revolution. The march began among women in the marketplace of Paris, who on the morning of October 5th, 1789, were near rioting over the high price and scarcity of bread. Their demonstrations became intertwined with the activities of revolutionaries who were seeking liberal political reforms and a constitutional monarchy for France. Market women and their allies grew into a mob of thousands, and encouraged by the revolutionary agitators, they ransacked the city armory for weapons and marched on the palace. They besieged the palace in a dramatic and violent confrontation. They pressed their demands on King Louis XVI. The next day, the crowd compelled the king, his family, and most of the French assembly to go with them to Paris. Well, these events ended the king's independence and signified the change of power and reforms about to overtake France. The so-called desire for democratic reforms, of course, was just a cover for an attempt for a different group to take power. 1813, War of 1812, the Army of the Northwest defeats a British and Native Canadian force threatening Detroit. 1838, the Kellogg Massacre in East Texas, these 18 Texas settlers either killed or kidnapped. Took place on Friday, October 5th, near Larissa, north of Jacksonville, northwestern part of Cherokee County. 18 victims included Isaac Kilall Sr. and his extended family, the families of 4 sons and 2 daughters. They immigrated to the Republic of Texas from Talladega County, Alabama in 1837. They settled December 24th, 1837. Now, unaware that the land given to them was hotly disputed by the Cherokee Indians who lived in the area, Isaac Kellogg and his homesteaders began clearing land for crops and building houses. Only a year before, the area surrounding their settlement had been set aside for the Cherokees under a treaty negotiated and signed by Sam Houston and John Forbes. When the Republic of Texas Senate refused to ratify the treaty, and in 1838, annulled it, the Cherokee, who already thought they'd given up enough, became highly PO'd. And the result was the massacre. 1869, the Saxby Gate devastates the Bay of Fundy region in Canada. The Saxby Gale. Can't read my own handwriting. It was a tropical cyclone that struck eastern Canada's Bay of Fundy region on the night of October 4th and 5th, 1869. It was named after Lieutenant Stephen Martin Saxby, a naval instructor who, based on his astronomical studies, predicted High tides in the North Atlantic Ocean for October 1st. Hurricane caused extensive destruction to port facilities and communities along the Bay of Fundy coast in both New Brunswick and Nova Scotia, as well as Maine, particularly Calais, St. Andrews, St. George, St. John, Moncton, Sackville, Amherst, Windsor, and Truro. That's one of the downsides of living on the beach. 1869, the Eastman Tunnel in Minnesota collapses during construction, causes a landslide and nearly destroys St. Anthony Falls. 1877, the Nez Perce War in the northwestern U.S. comes to an end. For those who are not familiar with the Nez Perce War, it was an armed conflict that pitted several bands of the Nez Perce tribe of Native Americans and their allies, which was a small band of the Palouse tribe led by Red Echo and Bald Head, against the United States Army. The conflict, which fought between June and October of 1877, stemmed from the refusal of several bands of the Nez Perce, which had been dubbed non-treaty Indians, to give up their ancestral lands in the Pacific Northwest and move to an Indian reservation in Idaho. The forced removal was a violation of the 1855 Treaty of Walla Walla that granted the tribe 7.5 million acres of their ancestral lands and the right to hunt and fish in lands ceded to the government. And after the first armed engagements in June of that year, the Nez Perce embarked on an arduous trek north to seek help from the Crow tribe. After the Crows refused to grant aid, they sought sanctuary with the Lakota led by Sitting Bull, who had fled to Canada in May of 1877 to avoid capture following the Battle of the Little Bighorn. So it was one of several lesser-known confrontations with Native Americans in the U.S. Army. 1905, the Wright brothers pilot the Wright Flyer 3 in a new world record flight of 24 miles in just 39 minutes, an unheard-of speed. 1910, in a revolution in Portugal, the monarchy is overthrown and a republic is declared. 1911, the Kowloon-Canton Railway commences service. 1914, World War I, an aircraft successfully destroys another aircraft with gunfire, something that had never been done before. 1921, the World Series is the first to be broadcast on radio. 1930, British airship R-101 crashes in France en route to India on its maiden voyage. 48 people are killed. 1936, the Gerald March sets off for London. It's also known as the Gerald Crusade, an organized protest against the unemployment and poverty suffered in the English town of Gerald during the 1930s. About 200 men, also known as Crusaders, marched from Gerald to London carrying a petition to the British government requesting the reestablishment of industry in the town following the closure in 1934 of its main employer, which was Palmer Shipyard. The petition was received by the House of Commons but wasn't debated, and the march produced very little in the way of immediate results. The Gerovians went home believing they'd failed, which of course did not help things. 1938, Nazi Germany, Jews' passports were invalidated. '98, American POWs executed by Japanese forces in Wake Island. 1944, the Provisional Government of the French Republic enfranchises women. 1945, a 6-month strike by Hollywood set decorators turns into a bloody riot at the gates of Warner Brothers Studio. 1947, President Truman makes the first televised Oval Office address. 1948, the Ashgabat earthquake kills between 10,000 and 110,000 people, depending on which report you read. 1962, first of the James Bond film series based on the novels by Ian Fleming. And this was Dr. No, is released in Britain. Sean Connery was the initial James Bond. 1963, the United States suspends the commercial import program in response to repression of the Buddhist majority by the regime of President Ngo Dinh Diem. 1966, a reactor at the Enrico Fermi Nuclear Generating Station in Detroit suffers a partial meltdown. 1968, a Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association march in Derry is violently suppressed by police. 1970, the Public Broadcasting Service is founded. PBS, don't you know? 1970, the British Trade Commission is kidnapped by members of the FLQ, triggering the October crisis in Canada. 1974, bombs planted by the PIRA in pubs in Guildford kill 4 British soldiers and 1 civilian. 1982, Tylenol products are recalled after bottles in Chicago are found to be laced with cyanide. 7 people die in the incident. 1984, Marc Garneau becomes the first Canadian in space. 1986, Mordecai Vanunu's story in the Sunday Times reveals Israel's secret nuclear weapons. 1988, a Chilean opposition coalition defeats Augusto Pinochet in his re-election attempt. That's Argentina. 1990, after 150 years, the Herald newspaper in Melbourne, Australia is published for the last time as a separate newspaper. 1991, an Indonesian Air Force C-130 crash kills 135 people. 1999, the Ladbroke Grove rail crash in West London kills 31 people. In 2000, mass demonstrations in Serbia forced the resignation of Slobodan Milosevic. And in 2011, in the Mekong River massacre, 2 Chinese cargo boats are hijacked and 13 crew members are killed. Now, these 2 Chinese cargo ships carrying millions of amphetamine pills were attacked on a stretch of the Mekong River in the Golden Triangle region, also on the borders of Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, and Thailand. All 13 crew members on these 2 ships were killed and dumped into the river. Deadliest attack on Chinese nationals abroad in modern times. In response, the Chinese temporarily suspended shipping on the Mekong and reached an agreement with Myanmar, Thailand, and Laos to jointly patrol the river. It was also the impetus for the Paidao Declaration and other anti-drug cooperation efforts in the region. On October 28, 2011, Thai authorities arrested 9 Phan Mong Task Force soldiers who subsequently disappeared from the justice system. Drug lord Nau Kham and 3 subordinates were tried and executed by the Chinese for their alleged roles in the massacre. The problem is, you don't really know who's responsible for what. Now, there's a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays, observances. World Space Week, October 4th through the 10th. In Indonesia, it's Armed Forces Day. Christian Feast Day. Anna Schaefer. Faustina Kowalska. Blessed Francis Xavier Silos in the Roman Catholic Church. Blessed Bartolo Longo. Tiresias. Hor and Susia in the Coptic Orthodox Church of Alexandria. Placid Morus. Placidius. Constitution Day in Vanuatu. Engineers Day in Bolivia, International Day of No Prostitution, yeah, as if, Republic Day in Portugal, Teachers Day in Pakistan, Teachers Day in Russia, and internationally, it is World Teachers Day. All right, let's see what else we've got. Okay, October 5th, 1969. Monty Python's Flying Circus makes its debut on BBC TV. Only 45 episodes are aired over four seasons, featured the zany comedy sketches of John Cleese, Terry Gilliam, Graham Chapman, Terry Jones, Michael Palin, Eric Idle. Some of the sketches still considered to be some of the greatest comedy skits in history. 1910, Portugal establishes a republic after the Portuguese monarchy is ousted by revolutionaries. 1925, the Grand Ole Opry, with the country music radio program broadcast live on WSM Radio in Nashville, Tennessee, launches on WSM radio station. I don't remember the beginning, but I heard it every week. 1928, the American Museum of Natural History is returned to Peking with a wealth of fossils from animals never before seen and from Outer Mongolia. They've been in constant battles with Chinese outlaws trying to get the food, supplies, and cars the expedition had, but they managed to get out and outwit and outrun the outlaws using brain work and the faster cars they had, which outran the outlaws' horses. Okay. 1933, Machine Gun Kelly pled not guilty to charges of being a co-conspirator in the Urschel kidnapping. 1954, Yugoslavia and Italy have ended their nine-year bitter dispute over the Trieste free territory and agreed to split it between them, with Italy getting control of the Adriatic port of Trieste and Yugoslavia retaining the zone that it had occupied since the end of World War II. 1962, East German guard shot a man with Tommy gun blast on the east side of the Berlin Wall and wouldn't allow ambulances from the Red Cross on the west side to approach, even though the man was screaming in pain. It's about 3 miles from Checkpoint Charlie. 1974, the IRA plant bombs in two pubs in Guildford in southern England. These are pubs frequently by soldiers back from duty in Northern Ireland. 1986, the first leak concerning the Iran-Contra scandal occurs when Eugene Hassenfrost is captured by troops of the Sandinista regime in Nicaragua. He confesses he's been shipping military supplies into Nicaragua for use by the Contras. The Contras have been created and funded by the United States and run by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. After a long, persistent investigations by journalists and Congress, it was found it involved the secret sale of U.S. weapons to Iran and the proceeds received from these sales used to covertly fund the Contra War in Nicaragua. 1986. The British Sunday Times ran a series of stories by an Israeli former nuclear technician named Mordecai Vanunu, revealed the secrets of Israel's nuclear arsenal, included as many as 100 nuclear warheads. He's later kidnapped in Rome by Israeli agents and smuggled to Israel. He's tried for treason and espionage and given 18 years in prison. 1989, the Dalai Lama, exiled spiritual and political leader of the Order of the Solar Tradition cult, committed suicide. Won the Nobel Peace Prize for shunning violence and seeking liberation from China for his Himalayan nation through peaceful means. 1994, 48 members of the Order of the Solar Tradition cult commit suicide to escape the hypocrisies and oppression of the world. Now that is a useless action to take. 1999, two trains collide near Paddington Station in West London at the height of the morning rush hour. There were 8 confirmed dead, 40 injured, and 200 minor injuries. It was also later confirmed 31 died in the accident, which was caused by one of the trains going through a red stoplight. 1999, the small Mexican village of Tezayutlan is buried by mud and rocks caused by torrential rains. Rescuers at the scene estimated between 60 and 80 homes completely buried. It's one of the many villages in the area affected over the next 3 weeks by mudslides and the full extent of the worst floods Mexico's seen in 40 years. but the full extent won't be known for some time due to the difficulty in reaching the outlying areas. In November, after the mud was cleared and buried homes checked, the final death toll from the floods was more than 400. The worst affected village was Aklama, where 170 were killed after the defrosted side of a mountain collapsed on the village. And in the year 2000, opposition supporters stormed the Yugoslav parliament in Belgrade, proclaiming Vojislav Koštunica as the new Yugoslavian president. The anger in the demonstrations were over Milosevic's rejection of a first-round opposition victory in elections for the federal parliament and presidents in September, which led to mass demonstrations in Belgrade, culminating in the storming of the parliament building. And finally, in 2001, concerns over the threat of an increase in biological attack by terrorists increased when a Florida man died after opening a letter containing anthrax bacteria sent through the Postal Service. Sometimes you just can't trust anybody. Well, that finishes our history segment. You know, we're going to take a little break from talking about assassinations. We're going to talk about some of the scariest places in the world. You know, I've been doing ghost tours since 1999. Somebody hijacked the name of my company and they're doing their own tours. And I keep getting phone calls from folks wanting to know if I got tickets to sell. I did it for 20 years until I just said thank you, no thank you. You know, sometimes the location just looks like it has to be haunted. In this particular instance, we're talking about a castle that has walls measuring 2 feet thick and made of solid stone. The big door is locked tightly with heavy steel clasp. But somehow, spirits get inside and stay inside. And they don't want to leave. You hear rattling and pounding and moaning and you get jabbed with what feels like bony fingers. The only question in the mind of many people is, are these entities going to follow you home? Sometimes ghosts do that. They attach themselves to people. And certainly, no places can be as scary as those areas that we populate with ghosts through our own minds. Let's talk. We'll go to Scotland and start out there. Talk about Edinburgh Castle. You know, at the time, it probably seemed like a great idea. A prisoner in the dungeons of Edinburgh Castle came up with an escape plan by burrowing into a pile of dung in a barrel. Once the dung was carried out of the castle and dumped, he thought he'd be able to make a run for it. What he didn't realize was that the hilltop castle disposed of its manure by throwing it off a cliff. Dung and prisoner both splattered on the rocks below. Now, apparently, this entity never got over his dung-covered death, so to speak. Visitors peering over the battlements swear somebody's tried to nudge them over the edge. Somebody who doesn't smell very good. It's one of the many spectral encounters at the glorious Scottish stone fortress with a history bathed in the blood from wars and executions and torture. Now, with structures dating back 9 centuries, the castle in Scotland's capital has a leading tourist destination. And it's said to be one of the most haunted. Perched 430 feet above sea level and surrounded on 3 sides by unscalable cliffs, the castle's seen so much violence over the centuries that it takes the title as the most besieged place in Great Britain and one of the most attacked in the world. Now, after centuries of bloodshed from warring royalty and political partisans, Edinburgh Castle has come under attack during the Second Jacobite Rising of 1745, after which it was used primarily as a military prison, locking up inmates from the American Revolutionary War and later on downed German Luftwaffe pilots during World War II, until it became an official historic site. You know, the ghostly sightings go back centuries. One of the earliest was a headless drummer boy whose spirit was first spotted in 1650, pounding his drum shortly before an attack. From this point forward, the castle soldiers believed that the boy appeared as a warning of impending doom. Another musical boy ghost is that of the young bagpipe player who hundreds of years ago was sent through a tiny opening deep under the castle to explore the labyrinth of newly discovered tunnels. He was told to play his bagpipes as he explored so that people could keep track of him. Suddenly the pipes went silent and the boy was never seen again. But sometimes today, mournful bagpipe music comes up from the depths of the castle grounds. Then there's the ghost of the beautiful Janet Douglas, Lady Glamis, who was imprisoned on trumped-up charges of witchcraft and poisoning, mid-16th century royal intrigue and infighting. She was eventually burned at the stake while her 16-year-old son stood and watched. Ever since that time, a spirit known as the Weeping Grey Lady drifts through the castle halls, accompanied by the sounds of hammers from the craftsman who built her scaffold. As recently as 2003, construction workers restoring one of the buildings reported being harassed by ghosts who had been prisoners during the Napoleonic Wars. And they even had pictures to prove it. Pictures showing what looked like fuzzy blue balls floating overhead. In fact, the workers were so rattled by what they saw, they refused to go into the building by themselves. Then we've got the ghost of a little girl named Annie, said to reach out and grab your hand. You know, down the hill from the castle in the old section of town, there's another community of ghosts who roam underground as the real Mary King's Close. Narrow alleyways buried beneath the city street in the 1700s. Close is a Scottish word for alleyway. These are the spirits of denizens of the once filthy lanes who died in the plagues of the 17th century. They return as floating heads. There's a woman dressed in black and a little girl who held on with her doll so she wouldn't be lonely after her parents abandoned her during the plague. You know, there's so many stories, real as well as made up. You don't know which one to believe. Then we have Raynham Hall in England. Well, the Brown Lady, as she's known, glides through the stately corridors of this English manor. In the winter of 1835, Charles Dickens' friend, Captain Frederick Marryat, paid a visit to the English country house of Raynham Hall with the expressed intention of disproving once and for all what he considered the ridiculous reputation for being haunted by a ghost known as the Brown Lady. Now, he spent two nights at the Townsend family estate. He even slept with a gun under his pillow, just in case. Never got so much as a glimpse of the famed specter, said to be that of Lady Dorothy Walpole, whose angry husband locked her up in a room in the 1700s after he caught her cheating on him and didn't let her out again until she died a lonely death from smallpox at the age of 40 in 1726. Then on the third night, Marryat saw a woman in the corridor drifting toward him, holding a lantern, and he knew immediately from her 18th century brown brocade dress he'd been wrong about the existence of the Brown Lady. As she grinned in a malicious and diabolical manner, Marryat's daughter later wrote, He sprang into the cordon with a bound and discharged a revolver in her face. Well, as you might guess, the ghost immediately vanished. Many others have reported gazing in terror at this tortured soul with a glowing face and dark holes for eyes, but none more famous than a photographer for Country Life magazine. He claimed to have captured the brown lady's ghostly image on film in 1936. This black and white photograph of the wispy white figure on the stairs became a global sensation. It sparked debate about whether it was real or just a fake. And it's hard to know. But certainly Captain Marriott may hold the title of being one of the first to try to shoot a ghost. Then in Japan, we have Himeji Castle. It's said to be haunted by a phantom. For 400 years, the imposingly elegant Himeji Castle survived wars and the elements. And it stands as a majestic white icon of 17th century Japanese architecture. Now, even the bombs of World War II reached the graceful citadel known as the White Heron Castle. Now, while it was certainly an impressive feat of planning and construction, it's also been protected, according to folklore, by the ogre-shaped traditional Kawawa ceramic tiles positioned at the ends of the roof ridges. They're supposed to repel the evil spirits and shield the fortress from attackers. And, interestingly enough, this fortress has never been assaulted. Built on a site used as a fortress since the 14th century, the castle was expanded in the early 1600s to a complex of 83 buildings with the expected turrets and gates and storehouses, all built with obsessive craftsmanship. One legend talks about a master carpenter who became so consumed that his workmanship fell short of perfection. He climbed to the top of the castle, put his chisel in his mouth, and jumped. 13 of the original 33 wells still remain, including one that some believe is haunted by the ghost of Okiku, a lady-in-waiting wrongfully accused of stealing one of the Lord's 10 valuable plates. She was tortured and tossed into the well, and it's said her voice can still be heard rising from the dark depths, counting from 1 to 9. When she gets to the 10th, she wails. That well, as you might guess, is now called Okiku Well. Then in Florida, we have the St. Augustine Lighthouse. It's said specters scream and smoke and laugh in this old tower. You know, don't let the cherry candy stripe paint job fool you. This lighthouse, which is nearly 150 years old on Florida's Anastasia Island, stands as much a beacon for ghosts as it was for ships. Built on land where Ponce de Leon thought wrongly he'd found the fountain of youth, this lighthouse is the domain of its long-dead keepers. The late Peter Rasmussen, who was the head keeper of the lighthouse for 20 years in the early 1900s, is said to still keep things clean and operational while puffing his favorite cigars. A lot of visitors have claimed to smell the cigars. More ominously, the screams of Joseph Andrew, whose career and life came to a violent end when he fell from scaffolding while painting the tower, can still be heard echoing throughout the structure. Then there are the sisters, Mary and Eliza Petit, and their playmate, who drowned in 1878 during construction of the tower. They returned for more fun and games. They like to play hide and seek. Skeptics say the noises attributed to their ghost are probably just from seagulls in the wind, but believers swear they can hear young girls laughing and giggling. And they like to pull pranks. One tour guide told the St. Augustine Record, "I had my ankle grabbed. And that was pretty amusing since it was in the middle of my tour, so it looked like I just randomly tripped over nothing." Now operated as a museum, the lighthouse embraces its haunted reputation. TV's Ghost Hunters found the paranormal activity so robust it shot 2 episodes there. And for those amateurs who like to go ghost hunting, the museum offers 90-minute ghost tours during the day, and for the bravest, their nighttime tours illuminated by glowing sticks, complete with your very own electromagnetic field meter, so you can track the ghost yourself. Well, let's go to California and talk about the Whaley House. Well, the chandelier swings and the shadow spirits dance in this historic San Diego home. In his 13 years as a paranormal investigator, Dave Schrader has gotten his share of frights. But it wasn't until he visited the Whaley House for a Travel Channel show that an otherworldly being made physical contact with him. He said, "I got literally knocked on my butt by someone in the Whaley House. It really shook me up." The ghost in this Greek Revival home in the city's old town district had been rattling visitors for more than 150 years. It was built in 1857 on the site of the gallows while James Yankee Jim Robinson was strung up for grand larceny in 1852. And no sooner had the house been erected than Thomas Whaley and his wife Ann started hearing Yankee Jim's heavy boots stomping on the wooden floors. Long after she died, Anna Whaley was said to return to her home in spectral form, cooking up Christmas dinners that can be smelled but not seen and unfortunately not eaten. Apparently joined by fleeting phantom figures whose shadows dance across the walls as the chandelier sways in the windless room, while light bulbs explode on their own. Perhaps these are the spirits of her son who died of scarlet fever and daughter who died by suicide. Not even celebrities are spared. Regis Philbin never got over his terrifying visit to the house in the 1960s when he reported he saw a white thing that was floating right in front of my face. Well, we go back to England for the Ancient Ram Inn, as it's called. It's a 12th century building in Gloucestershire. Built in 1145 as a priest's quarters and used to house slaves and masons during the nearby parish, building the nearby parish church of St. Mary the Virgin. This inn in Woolton-under-Edge, England, literally pulsates with paranormal energy. Some say because it sits at the intersection of two ley lines upon an ancient pagan burial ground. The most haunted spot is said to be the bishop's room, while a corner inhabited by two shimmering monks and a fireplace that screeches with the ghost of a man murdered by having his head stuck in the flames. When a pesky medium once investigated, unseen hands flung him across the room. Ghosts don't like to be bothered, you know. No fewer than 20 ghosts prowl the Ancient Ram Inn, along with an incubus. That's a male sex demon, don't you know? Who'd been known to push visitors down the stairs and crawl into the bedsheets with them. There's also a baby's cries that have been heard emanating from the men's kitchen. A ghastly white mist in human form moves through the stairwell, and a long-dead shepherd and his long-dead dog have been known to linger by the front door. This building is now operated as a bed and breakfast. Some guests have become so frightened they've jumped out the windows. According to Carolyn Humphreys, who grew up in the family that owns the inn, told the Daily Mail, "The whole house is absolutely terrifying. You never know what you're going to run into." Then we have in France, we have the Chateau de Brissac, where a murdered wife sighs from the afterlife in her luxurious castle home. Now, as was customary among 15th century French nobility, the marriage of Charlotte de Valois was motivated by politics, not love. Although she was a legitimate daughter of King Charles VII, Charlotte still held high enough esteem at court and in the family that in 1462 she could be married off to a nobleman, Jacques de Brézé. Now, they were said to have different dispositions. He enjoyed the outdoor life. She enjoyed more sophisticated indoor pursuits in their opulent home, the Chateau Brissac, in the Loire Valley. While they didn't even sleep in the same bed, they did manage to produce 5 children. You have to wonder how that came about. The May 31st, 1477, Jacques went hunting and then after dinner with his wife, retired to his separate bedroom, where somehow, probably through a servant, he discovered that Charlotte was cheating on him with one of his huntsmen, Pierre de Laverne. Angry and humiliated, Jacques stormed into his wife's room, where he caught her in flagrant directo with de Laverne, killed them both by running them through with his sword. Buried at Benedictine Abbey, Charlotte maintained a spiritual presence at the scene of her murder as La Dame Verte, or the Green Lady, as she's known, wandering her former home, maybe searching for her lover, whose ghost is curiously nowhere to be found. Today, the castle is a popular TV location, hosting 2 French culinary battles based on the original Iron Chef show from Japan. Operates as one of the world's most stunning bed and breakfast, where guests luxuriate amid tapestry-covered walls and sleep in 4-poster beds. But on the darkest of nights, sleep may be hard to come by as the sight of La Dame Verte drift through the ancient halls. You never know when ghosts will decide to go wandering. Then in Canada, we got the Fairmount Banff Springs Hotel. Well, a tragic bride returns for the wedding day she never got to enjoy. And after seeing her doesn't take your breath away, the ghost just might. The historic Fairmount Banff Springs Hotel sits high in Canada's Rockies amid snow-capped peaks and pristine forest with a spectacular view of the Bow River Valley. Opened in 1888 and expanded in the 1920s, this 4-star Alberta hotel has hosted King George VI, future Queen Elizabeth II, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill as guest. But its most famous guests are the ones who just really won't check out. There's the ghost of a young bride who died in the hotel on her wedding day in the 1930s. She either fell down the stairs or she died from burns when her dress brushed against a candle. She's known as the ghost bride or the doom bride, is depending on who you listen to. She glides up and down those stairs or dances in the upstairs ballroom. So popular, she got her own collectible coin and stamp in 2014. Now, the ever-helpful Sam the Bellman, said to be the ghost of a real employee from the 1960s, has been known to appear in his old plaid uniform to help guests lock out of their rooms. Or he may pop into his old office or lurk in the mezzanine floor, leaving a waft of cold air in his invisible wake. This 15-floor hotel has 764 rooms, but it used to have more. One of them, said to be room 873, has been drywalled over. Reportedly, it was once the scene of the murder of a family. Guests complained about being pushed out of their beds by disembodied hands, and they hear screaming in the middle of the night, and they've also seen bloody handprints appear on the mirror. And that would certainly enliven your morning absolutions. Well, from Canada, let's go to China. The infamous Forbidden City, where a faceless woman and strange beast emerge after dark in Beijing's palace. Now, certainly 600 years of executions, poisonings, backstabbing, and any number of other murders and betrayals brought on by palace intrigue have left a long trail of bodies and not a few restless spirits in the infamous Forbidden City. As soon as Beijing's Imperial Palace opened to the public for the first time in the late 1940s, ghosts and poltergeists began competing for attention in the Forbidden City. There's a sobbing woman, sometimes dressed in all white, sometimes in all black, who strolls the grounds. When spotted, she'll turn as if to say something, revealing a head with no face, just long black hair. Guards also report seeing strange animals darting about, but only at night, where eunuchs and concubines once roamed and plotted to get closer to the Chinese emperor. In fact, rumors have long swirled the reason for the Forbidden City never stayed open past 5 p.m. is because of the paranormal activity. That briefly changed in 2019 when it opened at night for the first time as part of the celebration of Lantern Day on the 15th day of the new year. Only a lucky 3,000 people were allowed within the red walls for a spectacle of illuminated red lanterns to capture what it must have looked like for the royal court centuries ago. The Peking Opera performed in the image of a treasured old scroll was projected onto the palace roof. As you might guess, there was no reports of ghosts appearing that night, but that doesn't mean they weren't there. Sometimes you can't tell the ghosts from the real folks. You know, as recently as the 1990s, guards chased a woman they thought had broken into the grounds at night. When they confronted her, she had no face. Then in Denmark, we have Drangsholm Castle, where a randy nobleman spent his final years in chains after one risky romance too many. You know, one of Scottish history's biggest cads, James Helpford, the fourth Earl of Bothwell, romanced and married Norwegian noblewoman Anne Trondesen, hit her up for money and then dumped her for a rich Scottish noblewoman. And he divorced that woman to marry Mary, Queen of Scots, just days later. Now, this all transpired over 8 busy years, from 1559 to 1567, and ended badly for the Earl. He stood accused of murdering Mary's previous husband. Now, he was acquitted of the charges, but the marriage to Mary ripped the country apart. I sent Bothwell fleeing back to Scandinavia, where he encountered a scorned Thrunson. As she sued him for abandonment and the return of her dowry, the powerful family locked him up in Drangsholm Castle, where he spent the rest of his life, another 10 years, mostly chained to a pillar half his height so he couldn't stand all the way up. Now today, that pillar still stands at Drangsholm, an 800-year-old edifice in Zealand, Denmark, remodeled into the Baroque style of the 1700s. The pillar is encircled by a groove carved into the ground by Bothwell pacing till he died in 1578 at the age of 44. Now, the Earl's as restless in death as he was in life. In fact, his ghost has been spotted in the castle courtyard riding in a carriage, sometimes accompanied by the sounds of horse hooves. He's just one of a dozen spirits haunting that medieval castle. And there are two famous female ghosts as well. The White Lady, said to be the spirit of a woman locked up in the castle by her father for a romance with a commoner. She was bricked into a dungeon while she was still alive, and in the 1930s, workmen reportedly found a skeleton in a small space wearing a surprisingly white dress. Now, the Grey Lady is a friendlier spirit who apparently worked there, and after being helped by the castle owner when she had a toothache, she's remained after her death. She's considered a protective spirit who watches over Drangsholm out of gratitude. You know, the Earl's body was exhumed from a church near the castle and found to be dried and mummified. It was displayed for decades in a glass-top coffin at the Copenhagen Museum. And then we have the tomb of his third wife, Mary, Queen of Scots. Well, in New Zealand, we have Larnach Castle. You know, in a bedroom upstairs in the castle, there's a cold presence that guides claim is Elizabeth Larnach herself. You know, on quiet nights, a ghostly figure glides across the castle's ballroom. Many believe this is the spirit of Katie Larnach, who was gifted the ballroom as a present for her 21st birthday in 1887. But only got to enjoy it for a few years before she died at the age of 26 of typhoid fever. You know, the tragedy hangs heavily throughout this 43-room Gothic Revival mansion in Dunedin, advertised as New Zealand's only castle, but not technically a castle at all. I mean, let's face it, the royalty never lived there. Battles never fought there, and sieges never endured there. It's built in what was then an isolated country for a wealthy banker and politician named William Larnach. He arrived in New Zealand from Australia with his wife Eliza and their four children in 1871. Eliza would have two more children, but she was depressed and lonely in the big house and died of a stroke at the age of 38. William quickly remarried her younger sister, who also died at 38 of blood poisoning. And then he moved on to his third wife, a woman 22 years his junior. Now, his financial situation had soured over the years, and he grew despondent. His mental state, no doubt, worsened by rumors his young wife was having an affair. 1898, William locked himself in the committee room at Parliament and shot himself to death. At least that's the story. Construction continued after his suicide, including a new ballroom for his eldest daughter. By the 20th century, the castle had gone through many owners and fallen into disrepair. And in 1960, new owners refurbished the castle and its grounds. 43-room estate now welcomes more than 120,000 guests a year, as well as the ubiquitous ghost hunters. With a dancing spirit joined by more menacing beings known to poke and shove visitors. You know, in 1994, a play about the Larnach family is performed in the ballroom. And as the guests were seated, a gale started blowing with soot and smoke flying from the fireplace and hail crashing against the metal roof. Just at the point where Larnach was about to kill himself, a flash of lightning shot through the room. That's according to castle owner Margaret Barker, as repeated on the website. Stuff. Then in South Africa, we have the Castle of Good Hope. This is the country's oldest building, pulsates with paranormal activity with a military twist. You know, the guards call it the ghost shift. That's 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. That's when the strangest thing seemed to happen in the 17th century fort at Cape Town. They hear footsteps, voices from unseen mouths, hear blood-curdling screams, and worst of all, there's a powerful force that tries to pull people into the dungeon, known as Dunkergat, or Dark Hole. The Castle of Good Hope is South Africa's oldest building, a pentagonal-shaped stone bottom on the side of a ship's replenishment station. It's built as tensions mounted between the Netherlands and Great Britain. Completed in 1679, it houses a church, a bakery, living quarters, and it had a massive bell that was cast in Amsterdam. It was done to warn people of danger and to announce the time. During the Second Boer War of 1889 and 1902, the fort also served as a prison, complete with torture and execution chambers. Now, what everything all good prisons should have. And it's in the oldest cells that the most paranormal activity throbs. Some overnight guards said to steer clear of them. One guard on a night shift reportedly ran toward the sounds of screaming in the prison section, only to find nothing there but an unmistakable presence that sent shivers down his spine. Elsewhere in the complex, a soldier reportedly hung himself from the bell tower. He also haunts the grounds, causing the old bell to ring on its own. Visitors have also heard soldiers marching across the old battlements. Then there's the ghost of Lady Anne Bernard. She lived in the castle from 1797 to 1802 while her husband served as colonial secretary. She's been spotted lurking on the periphery of official and functions, still wearing a period gown in the ballroom where she once hosted dignitaries. According to one castle staff member, there's definitely a presence. Sometimes it's an uncomfortable feeling. You're definitely not alone. You're being watched whenever you're in the castle. Then in Australia, we have Moosham Castle. Witches, werewolves, and executions bring the spirits of the damned to this medieval fortress. And visitors have felt hands grasping at them, and voices have been recorded by ghost hunters. Now, justice for suspected witches during the mass hysteria of the 17th century usually boiled down to two choices. Confess or die. Or be tortured with hot branding irons into confessing, and then you die. This Austrian fortress, whose scars reflect centuries of fierce battles and sieges from the Crusades to the Flemish Revolt, served as the headquarters for the systematic identification and eradication of witches during the Salzburg witch trials. Over the course of 15 brutal years, starting in 1675, the trials resulted in the executions of 139 people, dozens of them children, through burning and hanging and dismemberment and decapitations. Unlike the notorious Salem witch trials that targeted women in America, most of the accused in this particular instance were male. Almost all were poor beggars that nobody came to defend. Those who weren't put to death were imprisoned in the bowels of Morsham Castle in appalling conditions and had their hands hacked off so they wouldn't get into any more witchery trouble. Trials finally ended only to be replaced with a new insidious hysteria. In the 1800s, as cattle and deer were found mysteriously dead and mutilated, fear swept the region that werewolves were on the loose. Those suspected of being werewolves were tortured and thrown into the dungeons and executed. If you were a werewolf, you were killed. If you were suspected of a werewolf and you confessed, you were killed. And if you didn't confess, you'd be found guilty and killed anyway. Today, the cries of the damned can be heard throughout Morsham Castle, located in Unternberg and now privately owned and open for tours and overnight stays. But you have to be cautious. Some guests have been so scared they only last an hour inside the walls of that castle. And then we have some other haunted places. From a floating hotel where the sheets fly off the bed to a castle where a beheading went horribly wrong. We're going to start out with the Tower of London. 1541, Margaret Pole, the Countess of Salisbury, was hacked to death when she wouldn't sit still for her beheading at this fortress on the banks of the Thames. She'd been heard screaming on the Tower Green where the executioners chased her down. Visitors also reported hearing the anguished sobs of Lady Arabella Stuart, who died in the Tower in 1615. You've also seen the specters of the two young princes holding hands in the White Tower, as well as the ghost of Henry VIII's second wife, Anne Boleyn, of course, minus the head that was cut off. And another place that is said to be haunted that I spent time in was Queen Mary. It's a 1,000-foot-long ocean liner that transported the rich and famous in style and troops across the Atlantic during World War II. Now sits permanently docked in the harbor at Long Beach in California. The only regular passengers these days are the ghosts that haunt the various locations. One of the old staterooms, cabin B340, spontaneous toilet flushings, flying bed sheets, and breathy warnings to get out. So scared the guests that the room was permanently locked for a number of years. It's reopened for guests who want to take a walk on the wild and scary side. You never know what you're going to run into. And of course, we have the Empress Hotel in Canada. It's in downtown Victoria, British Columbia. It opened in 1908 and has hosted kings and queens and celebrities and even a couple of ghosts. A sharp-dressed, mustachioed spirit walking around with a cane is said to be the hotel's architect, admiring his creation. And there's a long-dead maid who keeps the sixth floor clean and a baffled old woman who's still working for her room, which was torn down long ago to make way for an elevator. Well, we've come to the end of another show. We'll be back for our next show. And once again, we'll be talking about some of the world's scariest place. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.